So a lot of people have likened the time you spend with God to the time you spend in a relationship that you value. If you don't spend time with the person, then, you know, how do you build a relationship? And the more you spend time with the person, the more you get better at understanding, or like when this person says something, you understand that better.
You're listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast where Ariana and I explore how we can incorporate spirituality into our everyday lives.
This episode is an intimate conversation between Abby Afolabi and me, Ariana. Whereas Abby grew up in a Christian household, I grew up without any form of religion. We explore how you deal with fear, with or without God in your life, and how Abby's relationship with God changed drastically when she moved from Nigeria to Switzerland. Oh, and Abby bust my myth that busy moms don't have time for a solid morning routine. Let's dive in. I wanted to start our conversation with learning a little bit about your childhood, because one of the things we discovered about the two of us is that I grew up in a household without religion and you grew up in a household where religion was omnipresent. So I'm really curious. Yes. Yeah, what do you remember from that?
Growing up, being in a Christian household wasn't really fun, actually. I think the things that I hated the most were family prayer time, which we would have once. I think we used to have it like once a week. It was usually like on a Thursday evening. And I didn't like this because we used to take turns in sharing what we had read in the Bible that week and what it meant to us and things. I'm like, I don't know, a 7 year old or something, and going like, what the heck? You know, and then we'd all take turns praying. And you know, you just kind of like came up with a standard prayer and pray exactly the same things that you prayed, I don't know, the last 2 years, the same words and stuff. And my parents' prayers would always be different because there were always things going on in their lives, you know, and they used to be long as well. And that was not really, that wasn't fun either. So it was like, when are we getting off of this? But at that time, I can't say that I had a personal relationship with God. In that sense, we had memory verses that we used to have. They are verses of the Bible where they're usually small for kids. They're usually shorter for kids to memorize. And some of those might be something like, there's one in the Psalms. It says, when I am afraid, I will trust in you, in God whose word I praise. And there used to be, where we were living, there used to be this dark corner coming into our door. And I, you know, as a kid, your imagination is wild. And I'm like, maybe there are monsters there. There's no electricity. It's not lit up. Maybe there are monsters there. So I start chanting, when I am afraid, I will trust in you. When I am afraid, I will trust in you. Like, sprint past that face, you know. So it was more like memory verses, songs, and my parents kind of like living their lives. My mom would always play songs throughout in the house, and like nobody else was allowed to play any other songs. It was my mom's songs. She was the one, more than anybody else, that we saw praying, reading her Bible. And, you know, my parents are completely different people. They're completely different people. My mom, we spent the most time with, and I'm actually quite grateful for that, because my mom is such a calm person. Nothing ever fazed her. Nothing ever fazed her. Now that we're older and she's telling us some of the things that she was going through in this time, you're like, how did you have that peace, you know? But her mom, so I think I shared at the Women's Hub Day that her mom was also infertile for about 8 years before she had several children. In our culture, an infertile woman is, at least back in those times, so this is like the 1940s. At that time, a woman who couldn't have a child was almost not a woman. Infertility, as it is now, people now sort of like understand it's not your fault. But in that time, it was solely put on her. So people would curse her. People would malign her. They would insult her, all of these things. And she found her solace in a relationship with God and in prayer. And even after she had her kids, that was an ongoing thing. But she would do it 5 times a day, my grandmother. And she had a bell. And if you happen to be in her house when the time was right, then you were joining her in prayer. She didn't care who you were, but this is going to happen. Until she died at 84, I think. So my mom had learned from her mom. And she also was, my mom's mom was also like a really calm person. So my mom learned from my mom, and my sister both learned from our mom. You know, and I can't tell you how valuable it is for me as a mom with kids and in a completely different setting from which we grew up in. So that for me is, that was kind of childhood. But I would say that it was definitely all present. It was all present. It was a context in which you lived your life. How did you behave when you were in school? How did you behave when you were around people? When you knew that your parents weren't watching you, and even if they're not watching you, you could get in trouble. If they were not watching you, you wouldn't get in trouble. But should you be doing that in the context of you being a Christian child and things? So it was like it was a guiding sort of conscience in the back of our heads. Yeah. But what about you?
There was no form of religion, Christianity, or anything else whatsoever in my household. So for me, there was also no concept of God. Like I knew people talked about that, but I'm also curious about how you saw that as a child. But the image I had of God was literally one from, we had a Bible for kids, and there was this.
Okay.
Picture. I don't think it was even God, but that picture just, I thought that person is God. It's probably Moses, but that was like, that guy is God. And I don't know. And I think I lived it most, like I would live it most through my friends. Like I had a Catholic friend that I was very close with. And
okay.
I would, whenever we had a sleepover party, like her parents would pray with us before we would go to bed or before dinner. Which is really sweet. I felt really like, oh, there's this beautiful thing where you're so conscious about, you know, how you spent the day and what you're grateful for. And there's actually this God person that looks like Moses that you can ask for guidance. So that was an interesting idea. But it had no meaning, really. It was just beautiful stories and Christmas, but nothing more than that, really. Yeah. And I grew up in the Netherlands.
Yes.
We're now both in Switzerland, but similar. For you, like you said earlier, like in my culture, tell me more about your culture. Like what's in Christianity in your culture versus now in Switzerland, maybe?
So in general, the Nigerian culture in general is very conservative. We have different tribes, many different tribes. I think we have about 250 odd ethnic groups, but they're all conservative. They're all conservative. Either they're conservative Muslim or they're conservative Christian. I think what was hardest for me when I came to Switzerland was separating what was cultural and what was Christian. Because I grew up and they were intertwined. So we have in the Yoruba culture, we have respect is extremely valued. Like it's so deep that even with twins, right? One's born 3-4 minutes before the other, we consider who the older one is, and the younger one should defer to the older one. In matters of life, if you're being very, very strict, the younger one shouldn't even call the older one by name, even though they're twins. So it's very, very, very hierarchical, right? And if you're talking about like conservative Christianity, Anglican, Catholic, you know, a lot of the older sort of denominations, there's a lot of hierarchy as well, you know, and people defer to people who are, I don't know, like considered spiritually more mature than they are, or spiritually in a higher place, right, than they are. The church I grew up in was quite unorthodox in that we didn't respect someone because of their title. It was more about who were you as a person, as a Christian, and how did you live your life. That's what garnered respect, right? But in general, it was more the thing of respect from my culture, and I would say not shaming the family name. I was very big as well, so make sure you're doing things well. And the sad thing about it was, it wasn't so much make sure you're doing the right thing, because okay. I need to track back a bit to the way Christianity looks at sort of life and the bigger picture and how we should behave, right? So it goes this way. We as people have a problem with sin, which is doing things that are not pleasing to God, right? And there was no other way out of this except God sacrificing his son. So with the Israelites, they had to sacrifice a lamb, and it was the blood of the lamb that sort of atoned for the sins of the people. It kind of paid for the sins, because sin is equal to death in God's eyes. So a life had to be paid for the sin that you've committed. Now, so God gave his son to die, because this is a life that is more than just a normal human life. So he sent his son, Jesus, to earth. And in order for him to die, because he is the only one who could pay for the sin, so that we do not keep sacrificing lambs over and over and over again, and that whoever believes in his message and in his love could live an eternal life. Now that's a different thing entirely. But anyways, and then as Christians, what we do is, because we're so grateful for this sacrifice, we do not sin. Not because we would be punished, but it's out of gratitude. So someone gives you, I don't know, like £1 million or something, and says, I'm just giving you this gift, right? And you don't have to pay anything for it. You're going to be super grateful to that person, right? If the person says, you know, this thing you did hurts me, or, you know, your attitude is going to be like, oh, this person is so kind to me, I don't want to do something to hurt this person, or that would intentionally hurt this person. And so that is where our behavior changes to do the things that please God, to live a life that pleases God, which usually is very, very helpful for humanity, I have to say. But it's out of gratitude, not out of fear. Whereas growing up in my Yoruba culture, you didn't do these things out of fear, not out of love. You did them rather out of fear, not out of love, because you do not want your parents to find out. You do not want to disgrace your family name. You don't want X, Y, Z, right? And that lesson of grace, so of God's grace, the gift that he's given to us, and the eternal life that he's given, and the favor that we have, without earning it, without doing anything, without actually paying anything for it. I think it's very difficult for a child to grasp, or there's a certain extent to which they can understand that. I think that with a certain amount of life lived, it gets clearer and clearer and clearer. That actually, you know what, I'm not doing this because I'm running away from punishment. So when I came to Switzerland, the difficulty was separating what was cultural from what was actual Christianity. And on both sides, what was culturally Swiss Christian? Well, the churches I went to were usually international, but what was about the culture, American culture in Christianity, Swiss culture in Christianity, British culture in Christianity, and how can I like strip all of these things, all the cultural things, because that's not what I want to do. I just want to be a Christian. And And that was very frustrating in that sense, because it was difficult to see where the culture ended and where the Christianity began. And that was one of the reasons that started to sort of like pull me away from the faith, because I was just confused, really. I was just confused and also surrounded with a lot of people who thought it was ridiculous anyway. So it was, yeah, it was easy to kind of walk away. Yeah.
Wait, but why was it ridiculous for the people around you to?
Because Christianity is outdated, is probably the word. Is outdated is possibly the word. For a lot of people in the Western world, it is. If you go to in Africa, it's not outdated at all. In a lot of South America, it's definitely not outdated either. And to be fair, actually, in Europe, it isn't outdated. It's just that there are newer religions that, and then there's science that a lot of people feel disproves Christianity. And so it's like over, I don't know, a couple of hundred years, it's like, so this doesn't make sense. And the truth is, on the surface of it, if you rationalize it, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And Jesus said something in the Bible. He says that he would use the foolish things to confound the wise, to confuse the wise things, meaning the stuff that looks like it doesn't make sense is what I would use to show that actually it does make sense. And it has to be a leap of faith to believe. So you can't come to Christianity feeling like you have all the answers. It's really a thing of, I don't have any of the answers, and I will defer to someone who knows more than I do, and take my hands off and believe that, yeah, he has what's right or best for me.
That's really interesting. It reminds me of the way my grandmother talked about her faith, where she always had this image of kind of God as a bird guiding her and you know, with the wings protecting her and just surrendering to knowing that this guidance is there. And yes, that to me felt so powerful.
I mean, the Bible uses so much imagery. Oh my goodness. There's so much imagery, especially like in the book of Psalms. And I hear what your grandma says, because there's one verse that says, I will dwell under the shadow of the wings of the Almighty. Right? So, you know, a bird kind of has wings. And when I was growing up, the image that was presented to me was like, you see a hen, and she's got chicks. And she hides them, you know, under her wings. And sometimes you don't see the chicks, and sometimes some of them kind of like pop out. But it's a thing of complete protection and overshadowing of the person. I had a question for you, and now it's yes. Okay, I remember. How did you, as a child, going back, how did you deal with like fear? Were you never afraid of anything? I was like a really scaredy cat as a kid. You know, I was just scared of my shadow, really. How did you deal with fear, uncertainty, all of that stuff, where as a child, you're kind of trying to figure out the world?
I definitely resonate with your fear of monsters everywhere. So I can definitely feel that. And of course, there are more existential fears, right, that you go through as a kid. Mm-hmm. I remember being very afraid that our house would burn down. Mm-hmm. No reason for that, but I had a deep fear, and I had plans of like what to do if that would happen.
Really? Well, okay.
Yeah. And I think with those fears, I would basically go to my parents probably.
Okay.
And when I was a bit older, this is something I came to realize recently. I've always had very close friendships. And I had, as a kid, I had a friend where we kept diaries together. So I have them lying here. I have like 10 or 15 diaries that we wrote together with that one friend. And if I think about it now, it is a form of prayer, I think, because that's where I would express my fears. That's where I would express, you know, my dreams,
right,
all these things. But it would be with another human.
Right, right.
Rather than.
Then when you got them out, you felt better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I still do that. I still do that. If somebody would download my WhatsApp history and find all my WhatsApp messages, you would know all my fears and desires and everything. But when I compare it to, you know, my grandmother and that image of the bird and the trust and all of that, then I feel like not having any form of that also makes your life hard, right? You have to work quite hard yourself.
Yes.
If you don't have that trust of, hey, there is guidance, there is someone I can talk to when things get hard.
Which is why I asked, because I know that as a kid, there were times when it could get hard as well. And that was, and then I was grateful that, you know, because I was told that that God loves me, that I don't need to go through anybody to speak with God. And I could come directly to him and just like offload. In fact, actually, the Bible says, cast all your cares, all your burdens on him. That's Jesus, because he cares for you. And so when I would feel, I don't know, kind of insolent, like, how can I, God doesn't really care about my little problems. And then I remember the scripture. I'm like, you know what, actually, you said that. So I'm just going to like offload on you, you know.
Yeah, you said that was okay. Yeah.
Yes, if you said it was okay, then I'm going to trust that it's okay. And I will just speak plainly, you know. And that was so helpful for me. So that's why I asked that question. Because for me, it's not intuitive to know what other people do or did, or, you know, it's a different reality, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think also because I didn't have the example really of what it would be like to have a relationship with God.
Yes.
It's also not something I missed because I didn't know.
Yes, because you didn't know. Yes, yes, yes.
What was your image maybe as a child and now? What's your image of God? How do you experience the presence of God?
So as a child, he looked like a grandfather. He looked like a grandfather figure in my mind. But it was like the pictures you'd see like in children's Bibles. So he's like super old, but without wrinkles and like lots of white hair and like a long beard. But he always had a kind face, right? Now he's faceless. Now he's faceless. There's no face to him, because I might be getting this wrong, but I don't think I am. I'm not getting it wrong. So I don't know if you know, the Bible is divided into two parts. There's the Old Testament and there's the New Testament. And the Old Testament was kind of like old Israel before Jesus. And the Old Testament is essentially what you have in Judaism. And the Judaism would pretty much stop at where the Old Testament stops. So that's like those are their holy books. And then Christianity combines that and the New Testament, so all the stuff that the apostles wrote and the words that Jesus spoke. And then after he was gone, and letters to churches and things. Right. Now, in the Old Testament, this was when God was giving the Ten Commandments around this time to the children of Israel. One of the things was that they shouldn't worship idols and they shouldn't make any cast images, like made out of any material, right? And one of the, and this was also very prominent in the Reformation of the church in the 16th century, I believe, like also in Switzerland. So God doesn't want us making images of him because he cannot be captured in an image. And so during the Reformation of the church, and you'd see this, you can actually see this in Switzerland, if you go to churches in certain cantons. So in Zurich, you go to the churches, you don't see like altars, you don't see paintings in the churches, they are bare. But if you go to a church in Solothurn, which is a Catholic canton, you will see all of these religious paintings and altars and things like that. And when there was this reform of the church, so what happened during the Reformation was, up until then, Christians didn't have Bibles, right? So they couldn't read the word by themselves. The priests, though, could read the word, and they would interpret the words for them. And I think it was Martin Luther that, I think he was a priest, and he started to read the word, and he was like, oh, but this is not what the Bible says. Like, what was being done in the church was different. And he was like, no. So he started challenging it, and eventually broke away from the church. And that's what happened. So then they started, there were a couple of them. There was Zwingli in Zurich here, and who was at the Grossmünster. He was the pastor there at the Grossmünster. And then there was Martin Luther in Germany, and then there was Calvin in Geneva. And so they would exchange letters and talk about what was actually written in the Bible. And that was part of it. And then they said, okay, no more graven images in anywhere. We're going to strip everything. We're going to whitewash everything, because this is not what God, this is not what is depicted in the Bible. So for me now, God is faceless, but he's more a power. It's very difficult to contain or to describe. I read something this morning in the Bible, and it was the person who wrote this book was describing like really magical and fantastic things. That this person, you know, he holds up the heavens with his spirit, and you know, like created the universe and all of those things. And he says, but this is just a whisper. A small whisper of his ways, of his person, that everything that basically that we see that we think is awesome is just a little glimpse of who he is. And then he says, who can withstand his thunder? So if he were to come with all of his power, then how would you? So this is why I say, like, it's very difficult for me to contain how I see. But it's like, I try and imagine the most powerful, awesome being, and still know that I can never capture that. And that helps me to put life into perspective, because I'm like, okay, if this awesome person is God to me, then I'm really, really a very small person. And my worries and troubles are nothing compared to him. So why am I worrying about it? Am I saying that if I believe that God is who he is and who he says he is, then my troubles are super small for him to handle, you know? And
easy peasy.
It's easy peasy, exactly. It's like telling your mom as a kid who's, I don't know, 2-3 years old and doesn't know what 5 + 5 is, like, mom, can you solve 5 + 5? And your mom is like, are you kidding me? Yeah. It is really. And so that helps me live in peace when things are going crazy. I'm like, okay, well, yeah. I've got someone who can. And I think the most profound thing for me is that it's not something that someone, yeah, they told me about it, but the Christian life is more experiential than it is just speaking, you know. And God calls us to actually try and test him to see whether he's lying or not, you know. And I've gone through so many things and so many spiritually weird things too sometimes, where then I go, okay, this happened in my life, so yes, I know that you're there. So yeah, that's how I experience God now. It's literally the biggest, most powerful being that I can imagine, but that person is empowering me mm-hmm. by being with me all through.
What I'm really curious about is, I love that you say that Christianity is something that's there always. It's not like I go to church and then I'm a Christian yeah. and then I go back home and then I mm-hmm. just do life.
Yeah.
So how...
It should be. Yeah. It should be. I have to qualify that yeah. because it isn't always.
Yeah. No. But what does that look like in your day to day? So very practically, you say you're reading the Bible.
Yeah.
You read the Bible this morning.
Yeah. Every morning, I at the time when I should I say came back to my faith. I was a mom already, and I'm like, oh, but God, I don't have time. I don't have time to read the Bible. I'm tired. There isn't even enough time in the day. And he's like, okay, go to bed earlier. No, first it was wake up earlier. I'm like, but wake up earlier. How much sleep am I going to get? That is not going to work. And then he says, well, and go to bed earlier. Like, duh. If you want more sleep, then go to bed earlier. And if you're going to go to bed earlier, then manage your time better. Do the things that you need to do and then leave the rest so that you have enough sleep to wake up earlier. Because I tried to read my Bible and pray during the day or at night after the kids were gone to bed. But then I would just sleep off. And it just wasn't working. And then during the day, it doesn't work because mama this, mama that, and you know, life starts. So it had to be early in the morning. And as I started to read the Bible as well, there are so many instances where people are meeting with God in the morning, early in the morning, you know, before the dawn breaks, before the sun rises. That's when they are, because that's kind of like the quietest time. In your mind, it's also about the quietest time, right? So it's the first thing I do in the morning. Sometimes I wake up at 4:30, between 4:30 and 5 anyway. I would be awake. I know. I had a, like in the beginning, 7 o'clock was like, I would have to drag myself out of bed. But 4:35 now. And I used to think like, okay, I'll be done with this in like 30 minutes. I'll be done. No. It's usually about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And I thought I'm there.
Really?
I know. I'm not kidding. Wow. It is quite some time. But in the beginning, it was hard. But now I literally can't live without it. Because when I'm there, everything is just lifted off, right? Everything is just taken off. Because like I said, again, it's the perspective thing, right? It's I'm meeting with God, and he's so much greater than everything else, but he just wants to love me. And so a lot of people have likened the time you spend with God to the time you spend in a relationship that you value, right? When you spend a relationship with, you have to kind of build the relationship. If you don't spend time with the person, then, you know, how do you build the relationship? And so that time is like relationship building time. And the more you spend time with the person, the more you know about the person, the more you get better at understanding, or like when this person says something, you understand that better. So before, maybe if I read my Bible, I wouldn't really understand much of anything. But as experience grows, you start understanding the nudges inside of you. You understand, one of the prayers I pray before I read my Bible is, you know, open my eyes to the things that I can't see alone. My heart is open to you. Just speak to me as you will. And so I don't want to be in a rush when I'm there. I don't want it to be like an observance, right? I should just do this so I get it and I tick it off. No, for me, it's a pleasure. In fact, it's more for me. It's for me. It's more for me than it is for God, actually, because he doesn't need me. He doesn't need me. I'm the one who's on the receiving end. So I don't want to rush it. I want it to end when it ends. So it's really like a time that I can chill without my kids, without any worries. And then that sets the tone, because if once I have my day and my life in perspective, to understand that nothing that happens is gonna end the world for me, and even if the world ends, you know what? It's all right, you know. Then I can go about my day in perspective without being too worried about anything. And like I said, when I start like that, it's like a it's an ongoing conversation and an ongoing presence in my life, right?
Yeah, you are breaking my excuse, because we sometimes have guests that are like, oh, I meditate for an hour in the morning, and we're like, oh, but we're moms, we cannot do that, we don't have time for that. And here you are.
No, but Ariana, look, I would never, if you had asked me a year ago to do that, I would, 15 minutes I couldn't spare, you know, but no. I the thing is, like, we believe as Christians that when you accept Christ into your life, because this was a promise from Jesus, that he will send a comforter and his spirit and that his spirit would lead us and guide us into all things. And his spirit is to live inside of us, right? And you, over time, you start to understand what is just you thinking or reasoning things out and what is God's spirit telling you, like, don't do this or do this or whatever. And so in the beginning, when I started again, it was like, okay, I'm just going to do this quickly. And you just feel this constraint, like, nope, I'm not done with you yet. I'm not there. And you're like, God, please, I need to. Nope, it's not time enough yet. And then when it's time enough, then you feel like, okay, you know, you just kind of like feel a release to go. Yeah. And even if you left before, it's not like you're going to be punished. It's just like, you didn't get the fullness of what I wanted to give you today, but all right, there's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Again, my husband still thinks I'm a bit crazy.
hopefully he sees what it brings.
Yeah, it does.
You know, that's one of the things I find so cool is that you were at the Women's Hub Day sharing your story last weekend. And a comment that I heard from a lot of people is that you have this sort of natural calmness. Even though you're a very vibrant person, underneath the surface, there's just a sense of calm. And I imagine a lot of that comes from this and from your genuine relationship with God and you honoring that relationship. Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful. I'll tell you one thing that is one of the things that is driving me right now is in my 20s, in my late teens and 20s, I really had some very serious encounters with God and other elements. And I knew that God was very real. So in my life, I've never doubted that. Even when I walked away, it wasn't really like that I didn't believe in God, or it was just, I don't feel like doing this right now. This is too much hard work. And when trying times came, when troubles came, and those are the times when, for Christians, these are the times when you're to hold on to God the hardest or the most. But I did exactly the opposite. I don't feel guilty and I don't feel shame about it, because that is actually something that God is very particular about, that you are not, that you, he does not like condemnation. So he doesn't want you to take that guilt and shame on yourself. He wants it off of you, because that makes you feel, that brings you down, right? He says instead that all the things that you've done are in the past. I will not remember them. They are as far as the east is from the west. I will never remember them again. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time we're the ones who remember those things. So I do not feel guilt and shame, but I kind of feel sorry. I'm remorseful in the sense of, oh, if I had held on to you at this time, it would have gone so much better. And still, even though I did all of this, even though I practically rejected you, you still were there, you know, you still didn't leave me, you still didn't abandon me. And I always feel like life, even the hard times in life, there are lessons for you to learn in that. And so for me now, if you don't learn the lessons the first time, then you have to repeat the class again and again until you learn the lesson. And I do not want to repeat those lessons. So I'm like, you know what? The hard times coming, you know, I'm just going to stay and I'm just going to hold on to you and I'll learn what I'm supposed to learn so I can move forward, because I do not want to repeat stuff again. And so for me, that's kind of a driving force in that, you know, I want to learn the lesson well the first time. I don't want to have to repeat the classes again. So that's part of my holding on now. Yeah.
And you said earlier that when you moved to Switzerland, you kind of got out of touch with God for a while, and then you reconnected, and I feel like deepened your connection to God so much.
Oh yeah.
Can you say a little bit about that? Like, how did it get lost, and how did you get back together?
It got lost in the confusion that I spoke about, like trying to figure out what was just Christianity and what was cultural, right? And it's just so much confusion there. And at the same time, life is happening. You're hanging out with, I had lots of friends. I had Christian friends, but I also had lots of friends who weren't Christian as well, who, like I said, it's like ridiculous for you to believe. And at the same time, I'm away from the culture of not doing things to shame your family name. So actually, you know, you can do whatever, right? And also knowing that God is a forgiving God. I think that was taking his grace for granted, which is actually one of the things you're not supposed to do. Like, if there are things you're not supposed to do, you're not supposed to do that. He will forgive you, but out of love and respect, you're not supposed to do that. And so I just kind of played around. I don't know, have you heard of the Amish people in...
Yeah, sure.
So at about, I think, 16, between the ages of 16 and 18, they send them off into the devil's playground, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of like my devil's playground in that sense. I mean, I've never been very wild, but, and so it wasn't particularly wild. It was just the space of sort of nothingness. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine in uni in Nigeria, we went to uni together in Nigeria, and he is, I think he's an atheist now. And he was telling, but when we were in school together, he was Christian. And he is still in Nigeria as well. And then he was telling me why he didn't believe any longer. And I remember kind of like agreeing with him. So this was not even too long ago. It was probably about 3 years ago. I would say about 3 years ago. And I remember agreeing with him because I just didn't feel God so practically in my life. And that made me feel like he wasn't really there, you know, that I had to start sort of like coming to terms with. And I just, there were no answers for me. And because I didn't invite God in my life, I wasn't spending time, like I was saying to you, if you have a relationship and you're not spending time with the person, you don't know, over time, you don't know that person anymore, right? You don't know that person anymore. So I didn't know God's heart on things. I didn't know his mind on things. And so I didn't really believe. I wasn't doing anything I was supposed to be doing, so I did believe. And it was actually my kids that got me back into church after we got to Zurich, because like I said, I wanted to give them that sense of security that I had growing up, you know, running through thinking that there are monsters behind every dark corner. I wanted to give that to them. And so I went back to church, and I get in, and then he's like, you know, he starts to nudge me, and you know, you should. And then some of the sermons as well would just kind of like stab at my heart. They're like, no, but I can't do it. I've spent so much time away from you. Like, you shouldn't. It's like ghosting someone. Like, the person's calling you, and you're ghosting them, right? And then you feel like, okay, now I would really like to reconnect with this person, but I've been so bad, and I've ghosted them for like a couple of years.
It's very exactly awkward,
like,
now.
It's very awkward now. But that was how I was feeling. But he says, the door is wide open. Just, you know, walk back, confess. Confess that you are a sinner and that you don't know everything, and that you want this, life back. And that's it. It's like, it's a split second thing. I will forget everything. I will not hold, I'm not a man. I will not hold all of these things against you. And my arms are open wide. And yeah, so one day I broke. I'm like, okay, fine. You love me anyways. There's a song I was listening to yesterday, and it says, okay, it says lots of things, but one word says, oh God, I receive your love. And for human beings, we can be so tough on ourselves, and not be able to, like, even when someone's forgiven you for something, you can't forgive yourself. Someone has said to you, I will give you absolute unconditional love. There's no condition to this love. It is wider than the oceans and than the seas. And I want, you know, no condition attached to it, but you cannot forgive yourself. And because you cannot forgive yourself, you can't reach out and accept this love that is being offered to you on a platter just to take it. And so that song, saying I receive your love, is I forgive myself. And because you have considered me worthy of this love, I receive it not because of how I see myself. I receive your love because of the way you see me, and you see me as precious and as loved. So I receive it because of you, not because of me. My kids have memory verses, and their memory verse this week, I give them memory verses every week. Their memory verse this week is, we love because he first loved us, right? So in Christianity, it wasn't us who came to God first. He was the one who came to us first. And like I said, because we received it, now out of love and respect, then we live our lives for him. So that's how I received his love back. And sometimes I want to feel guilty and ashamed. I'm like, nope, I'm not taking the shame. I'm not taking the guilt on me. God says that I am worthy, and so I am worthy. And anybody who doesn't like it, you know, they should take it up with God.
So is there anything, you know, is there anything when it comes to Christianity that you feel we haven't touched on that would be good to wrap up with, or maybe a beautiful, some words from the Bible or anything that you feel would help us wrap up our conversation?
Oh my goodness. As you can probably tell, I can talk about my faith forever. I can. I would say, do not judge the church, and do not judge Christians by what you see. Christians are flawed people. They are flawed people. And that's the nature of Christianity, that it is help for broken people, basically. And so they're not perfect people, and the church isn't perfect. It's a place for broken people. And when you bring broken people together, stuff is going to happen. But do not knock it. Do not say no to it because of something that somebody else did, or because of the history that is attached to the church. If you are saying no to it, know what you are saying no to. Christianity is a very personal, very one-to-one relationship. It's not what you do in church that makes you a Christian. It's not what you hear in church that makes you a Christian. It is entirely your relationship and your obedience and your submission to God that makes you a Christian.
Thank you for listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast in which Ariana and I explore the role of spirituality in everyday life. Stay tuned for our next episodes to meet more inspiring guests and hear more anecdotes from our personal lives to inspire your own spiritual journey. And if you want to dive deeper, we invite you to sign up for our newsletter on our website, livingtheunseen.com, to read more about our podcast guests, hear our personal reflections on the episodes, and be the first one to know when a new episode comes out. And lastly, we are immensely grateful for your support. If you enjoy our content, we would love for you to rate us with 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and gives Ariana and me some extra motivation on our podcast journey. Until next time, and keep living the unseen.